Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here's the latest example of Donald Trump's America First nationalism rather than internationalism. He's placing profits for U.S. weapons manufacturers over the apparent murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi by the government of Saudi Arabia.
I would not be in favor of stopping a country from spending $110 billion, which is an all-time record, and letting Russia have that money and letting China have that money, because all they're going to do is say, that's okay, we don't have to buy it from Boeing, we don't have to buy it from Lockheed, we don't have to buy it from Raytheon and all these great companies. We'll buy it from Russia, we'll buy it from China. So what good does that do us? There are other things we can do.
But do you think they should pay a price if it's
yeah, there'll be something that has to take place. First, I want to find out what happened, and we're looking. Again, this took place in Turkey, and to the best of our knowledge, Khashoggi is not a United States citizen. Is that right?
Or
is that
right?
He's a permanent resident. Okay. We don't like it, John. We don't like it, and we don't like it even a little bit. But as to whether or not we should stop $110 billion from being spent in this country, knowing they have four or five alternatives, two very good alternatives, that would not be acceptable to me.
President Trump speaking yesterday, presumably previous U.S. governments would have at least started putting some kind of pressure on the Saudis or show or talk much tougher to show that we balance alliances and global standards of behavior. But the new nationalism seems to sideline that balancing act as almost irrelevant. Trump also has had little or nothing to say about the Saudi human rights violations leading to a refugee crisis in Yemen that we talked about here on the show on Wednesday. So it's a global trend that nationalism is on the rise, often to the detriment of democracy and to the danger of truth and to journalists like Khashoggi, maybe not a sympathetic victim to Donald Trump. More than 40 journalists have been killed around the world this year, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. Our next guest today is John Judis. He's an editor-at-large at Talking Points Memo, the liberal website, a former senior writer at the National Journal, former senior editor at the New Republic, and the author of many books. His new one, I think you could say, is an attempt at some straight talk from one progressive to others about understanding the nationalist wave, not just denouncing it. It's called The Nationalist Revival, Trade, Immigration, and the Revolt Against Globalization. John, thanks for coming on.
Sure. Happy to be here.
And you describe the cosmopolitans of the world as mostly metropolitan or college town dwelling elites who believe in a borderless world. Do you think they don't get it about why Trump and these other things are happening?
Well, yes, I think that there is a real polarization happening in the country, and that it's unfortunately it's happening from both sides. I think that the some liberals and Democrats have a kind of Manichaean good versus evil view. I'm not talking about Trump, but about the people who support him. And that worries me.
Go further. Who are they missing what about?
Well, I think they're missing the complexities of human nature. I mean, we're a cauldron of a lot of unruly impulses and sentiments. Nationalism is a very valuable basis for our democracy. What it means basically is that there's a we, that there's a sense that we are all part of the same nation. And when you have a democracy, that assumes that people feel that other people, even if they don't know them, have an equal right to determine what happens in the country.
So do you think there could be such a thing as, but there isn't much right now, as progressive nationalism? I mean, I heard somebody say, I wish I could remember who it was recently, patriotism is benign, nationalism is dangerous. Are you calling for a progressive nationalism?
Well, look, I mean, you know, we'd have to unpack a lot of what people mean by one thing and the other. But I'm myself from the Midwest originally. My parents were in manufacturing. There's a real issue. In the 1995, I wrote a manifesto with Mike Lind in the New Republic for a new nationalism. And what we were talking about then is we wanted America to direct its economy to do things on behalf of people within the country and not on behalf of multinational corporations. That was really the contrast. It was what worried us was that our trade policies and things like that were being subordinated to the interests of, let's say, lobbyists and on K Street in Washington and not to ordinary Americans. That's a kind of nationalism that, again, I think resonates. Ross Perot, for instance, in 1992 spoke to that kind of nationalism.
Against NAFTA, what he called the giant sucking sound of jobs going
south of
the border.
He was concerned that there would be a kind of race to the bottom, that companies would be trying to lower their labor costs, evade taxes, regulations. And, you know, I think that that's part of what happened. Nationalism can have two sides. I mean, Abraham Lincoln was a nationalist, but so was Hitler and Mussolini. And I think what we have to realize is the problem isn't us having a sense of national identity, but it's how that's used and what the basis of it is. So again, I think in that sense, I think there always has been a certain commonality among all Americans that we're missing with this present polarization.
Since you brought up trade and NAFTA, what do you, and Ross Perot in that context, what do you think of Trump's tariffs? Is he doing a good thing in the way he's trying to reverse that trend? One thing I notice about the rhetoric is that he never blames the multinational corporations who move those jobs overseas. He blames the countries. He blames Mexico. He blames Canada for eating our lunch, ripping us off. He said Canada was raping our economy at one time. But he lets the companies off the hook. But what do you think about the tariffs policy?
Well, look, he doesn't really, in his campaign, he didn't let the countries off the hook
at
all.
As soon as
he used to talk about Nabisco moving out of Chicago and he was going to boycott Oreos.
Right.
And we know from one of his campaign aides that he was still eating Oreos on the campaign airplane. You know, and he still talks about Apple should make its iPhones in the United States. But I think that you're right, that for the most part, that kind of rhetoric is gone. And it's reflected, too, in his approach to taxes, too, because in the campaign he was talking about tax havens, companies moving their headquarters overseas. Now it's mainly has been huge tax breaks for American companies. So there has been some kind of a shift. We have to do something about our trade relations with China. It's a big problem, not just for us, but globally. It was one of the reasons for the Great Recession in 2008. You know, Trump is taking an axe to it. Previously, what we did was to some extent ignore it under Tim Geithner. No complaints about the currency.
Under Obama, that's his Treasury Secretary for people who
don't
remember the name.
I'm not sure what his strategy is, and I don't think I'm not a super expert, but I've asked the experts, and they don't either know. In the end, what he's really negotiating for, what he wants the Chinese to do. Now, does he want them to promise not to steal our trade secrets? You know, that's the kind of promise that's easily made but very difficult to enforce.
My guest is John Judis, who's editor-at-large these days at Talking Points Memo and now has his latest book out called The Nationalist Revival, Trade, Immigration, and the Revolt Against Globalization. If you want to chime in or ask John Judis a question, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We talked about trade. Let's get to immigration a little bit. We had the former conservative Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, here the other day, and he said, you know, if Americans who oppose Trump want to have any chance, they have to be serious about illegal immigration as a problem. They have to acknowledge it as a problem. And to somehow get the borders under control and then have a rational debate about how many people and from where and with what qualifications we want to immigrate to this country. But as long as people seem to just dismiss Trump as a hater, even if he is a hater, because illegal immigration is a legitimate thing to be concerned about, the left's going to lose. What do you think?
I basically agree with that. And I also agree with the position that Democrats and liberals have taken, is that we have to do something about the 12 million undocumented or illegal immigrants in this country.
And you mean like easily, a path to citizenship?
Yes, easily exploitable. No conceivable way except by very draconian means to deport them. So they're here. We have to do something.
But that's the centrist deal that the right has rejected over and over again. Try as George W. Bush and other kind of moderate Republicans on this might have tried to get it through, hence Donald Trump.
Yes, but I think if you look at the 2016 campaign and who emphasized what, the Clinton campaign really did not talk about illegal immigration and borders and the need to know who are the citizens in this country. I mean, again, that's the important to the very idea of democracy. If we're paying taxes, who are we paying taxes to support? If I pay my taxes, it's going to go to some person in Orlando, Florida, who's disabled. That's fine. But if it's somebody who, you know, is not even a citizen, that might not be fine. I think I understand people's concern about that, and that the liberal and democratic side hasn't expressed sufficiently that kind of worry.
We'll continue in a minute with John Judas. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with John Judas, author now of The Nationalist Revival, Trade, Immigration, and the Revolt Against Globalization. And Ray in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ray. Ray's like 10 seconds behind us because he's listening to the delay on the radio. Ray, all right. Let's try Chris in Montvale. You're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling about the journalist who is supposedly to have been killed. And Trump said yesterday that he's a permanent resident and therefore we have no role. Unfortunately or fortunately, he is correct. Imagine the country where he is a citizen of, this journalist, his country. I don't know if it's India or Turkey or whatever. If they make representations and then we are making representations as well, it doesn't work. It's got to be the country where he's a citizen. And Trump is right on that one.
Does live here, and he writes for the Washington Post, and even just almost no matter what country he comes from, given the U.S. supposed leadership role in the world with respect to standards of behavior by governments, and Saudi's, you know, such a close ally, no? No role?
No, it makes no difference. It's all about sovereign rights, and through the Geneva Convention on Consular Relations, who is authorized and who is entitled to really make representation? It would be the country where he's a citizen. There is an associated point on this. Mm-hmm. If you're a permanent resident here and you commit a crime, it's called a crime of moral turpitude. It could be shoplifting or whatever. Strictly speaking, you could be handed over to immigration to be deported. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people should become citizens, I guess.
Chris, thank you very much. John Judas?
Yeah, well, first of all, I wouldn't make that kind of distinction between permanent residents and citizens. But I want to remind the caller what happened when the British believed that the Russians had poisoned and killed this guy who was a defector. Now, he had nothing to do with the United States, and we pulled, 40... kicked out 40 Russians out of our country. So there's no relevant distinction, and And defending this guy and protesting what's been done and doing something about it, like stopping our arms sales, is really in our national interest to do so, because what we want, again, is an international order that respects human rights, doesn't kill journalists who they happen not to like what they're saying. And in this case, we have a guy who was writing for the Washington Post, so it's an American journalist in that sense.
You don't only write about the U.S. in this book, but also the U.K. with Brexit and other European nationalist waves, and even elsewhere around the world. What's important about what ties them together?
Well, the remarkable thing is how similar the constituencies for this kind of right-wing populist nationalism are. They really are the people who have been left behind to some extent by globalization. It's not the poorest people. It's the people who live in small and medium-sized towns that were once based in manufacturing and mining. A lot of whom have been affected either by exports from China or by the European Union and the way the euro has imperiled certain countries. And they form the base. If you go into Hungary, for instance, if the vote were entirely in Budapest for who would be the head of the country, Viktor Orban wouldn't be it. It's the small towns. Austria, the same way. Germany, the alternative for Deutschland, it's mostly East German. It's the part of the country that has been, to some extent, deindustrialized, poorer, but not, again, they're, prosperous by some standards. And the United States, Midwest, Middle America, smaller towns, not the bigger towns. So that's been the social base of the movement. And the issue that most inflames, I'd say, this social base is really a combination. It's not just immigration, but it's a fusion of immigration and the threat of Islamic terror. That's what blew everything up in the 2000s and continues to be a big force. I mean, people forget that in the 2016 election, we had San Bernardino and Orlando happen during it. That was really important, and it kind of highlighted it. It made it so people weren't just resentful of illegal immigrants, or of the number of unskilled immigrants coming into this country, but they're worried about people coming in who would blow up shopping malls. So that's the key combustible issue.
Ray in Brooklyn, we'll give you another shot. Are you there, Ray?
Yeah, hi, I'm here.
Hi, and we've got...
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, and I apologize in advance. We've got about 30 seconds for you. Go ahead.
Oh, great. No, I'm really applaud you bringing on the speaker who has a different viewpoint than your regular speakers do, because about time somebody understands nationalism and what's going on in this country now under Trump. It was what was sorely needed, which was missed during the eras of Bill Clinton and Obama and Bush. They just cared about, transferring jobs out with NAFTA, and it's about time somebody stood up for this country, and I feel whatever things which are personally wrong with Trump, there are certain things, at least he gets something done, jobs done, and hopefully he gets jobs back, and I think it's about time people, don't keep on, shaming him on CNN and all those news media outlets, and start giving him,
credit.
Positive
yes.
feedback.
Ray, I'm going to leave it there because we're going to run out of time. I don't know, you're going to get fired from Talking Points Memo drawing praise from callers like that.
I think a lot of what I'm trying to say in the book is that Trump's election did represent a rebuke to a certain kind of politics and economics that dominated the country in the 1990s and the early 2000s.
And so in 15 seconds, what's the beginning of a progressive alternative that takes it seriously without reverting to racism and the kinds of inequality-promoting policies that we still associate with that side?
Well, you see the beginning of it in the Democratic Party, the sort of post-Bernie Sanders party. But the problem we're having in the United States is that Donald Trump is such a showman that he dominates the politics. And the 2018 election looks like it's going to recapitulate.
You want more Democratic,
the 2016.
More Democratic socialism.
Yeah.
The nationalism.
Well, again.
To be continued. I apologize, but we're out of time. The nationalist revival, trade, immigration, and the revolt against globalization. John Judas, thank you. And by the way, John Judas, if you want to see him in person, will be at the Strand this Monday at 7:30, Monday at 7:30 at the Strand in the Village to see John Judas in person.